Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Thank you so much to Projector for sponsoring today's episode. So you might have heard us talk on the last couple of podcast episodes about Projector, which is a new graphic design platform for visual storytelling. And let me tell you, something that we're really, really excited about is the fact that they have this highly curated template library, which for me, when you're like, I don't know where to start, let alone where to end this thing. Like, please, like, guide me all the way from the beginning. Show me how to get there.
It's the type of thing that will not only guide you and give you the guardrails, but it will also kind of prevent you from making it too ugly. Like, totally. I just think it's one of those types of design tools. And like, you can go through the templates and you can have the sort of palette of a thing or two colors and logo and all of that, and just do your own thing and sort of know that you're like doing, you're going in the right direction.
It's 100%, 100%. When you sign up for Projector, you get access to a library of professionally designed templates for everything from Instagram posts and stories to presentation decks and one-pagers, which feels like a strangely huge win. Mm-hmm. And instead of starting from scratch every time we need to design a visual for Instagram, I can just go in and find a template that we already like in Projector, edit it to add our own personal thing or two vibe. And just like that, it looks great. We can post it. There doesn't have to be a whole lot of back and forth and a lot of like, oh, should we judge this way? Or like, is this even fitting the general guidelines of graphic design?
Right. Because we like already have it set up to be fitting all of those exactly. guidelines.
Exactly.
Projector takes a quality or quantity approach to templates, which means you won't have to scroll and scroll and scroll and keep scrolling forever until you find one that works for you. Their templates are all beautiful, functional, and designed for marketers and designers. You will find one you love quickly, promise. Their templates are also great for getting things done at work too. They have polished styles that help you craft an editorial calendar or plan out the week in social media posts, which has been huge for me. As Erica knows, I used to like just procrastinate so much on the social media posts because I would struggle with the artwork, and now I can get so far ahead. The next time someone asks who designed this, you'll get to have the amazing feeling of answering me. Projector is the design platform for designers, marketers, and creatives with something to say for all the content that needs designing. Whether you're collaborating across a team or you're a one-person show, easily craft brand visuals with approachable yet professional design tools that can keep up with your content calendar. Dream it, then make it. With Projector, everything happens in your browser. There are no downloads required, and it's free. Free to sign up, free to use. Give it a try today at projector.com/athingortwo and make something cool. That's projector.com/athingortwo. Thank you so much for using the special links that these advertisers provide to us because it helps them know that we sent you.
Hi there. We wanted to take a second before we get into this episode to thank you for listening. We really, really love getting to do this show, and your support, whether it's by subscribing, leaving us a review, or supporting our advertisers, is what makes it possible. We are ridiculously grateful. And I'm sorry that I'm going to do a whole like people are asking influencer energy thing here, but sometimes people do in fact ask us if there are other ways that they can support us.
Friends, the answer is yes. Our Secret Menu membership program is a once weekly members only newsletter that costs $4 a month, and your first month's fee goes straight to charity. We cover all sorts of topics. We're talking shopping, gifting, food, entertainment, even advice, and of course, snacks. You can sign up for it all at athingortwohq.com to start receiving it, and you'll even get access to all the back issues you missed. And if you've made it this far without subscribing to our free Monday newsletter, well, what are you doing? Go ahead and rectify that. Also at athingortwohq.com. If all of that sounds like too much effort, we get it. Maybe just take 15 seconds to go smash some stars for us in the rating section of Apple Podcasts. That helps a ton. Truly. Thank you. Now on to the show.
Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. If you want more where this came from and want to support us in general, head to athingortwohq.com and sign up for Secret Menu, which will get you weekly access to members-only content.
To share your thoughts on this episode or anything at all, leave us a voicemail 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at athingortwohq. Ugh, Erica, I'm so excited for how we are kicking off this episode.
Why? Because you're starving?
Yes.
For one.
We have Julia Tertian coming on later, which is really exciting and probably
which is like the most of you are here.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, fine.
We know that's what you've come for. However, we are kicking off the first of what at least I hope is a long-running segment. It's a taste test. We haven't officially named it, but in spirit,
working title
is Chip Chat.
When it gets picked up for like a full season, then we'll come up with a final name. But for now, it's working title. This is its pilot episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I have to give Chris credit for the name Chip Chat. I also have to give him, I have to dock him credit for the fact that he
opened the chips before the chat.
Opened the chips before the chat.
After you told him about the chips being part of the chat.
Listeners, I specifically put the chips for the chat in a separate tote bag off to the side, not in the pantry.
The same tactic I used because I was like, but what I did is I put them in a tote bag and hung them up with my coats. And you're like, no, bitch, I did the same thing. Right. But nonetheless, my husband went scavenging through the tote bag for the treats.
I was incensed. And he was like, do you want me to go out and get more? Like, are there not enough left for your taste test? And I was like, no, it's that you didn't listen. It's that you violated the stash.
And then they're not the freshy freshest either.
That was honestly my biggest concern. So when we get to the vegan cracklins, we're going to have to compare how mine taste with yours.
I hear you.
We'll tell everybody what we're going to be tasting.
Yes, please. The tasting menu.
Mm-hmm. We've got the Annie Chun's Gochujang Seaweed Crisps.
Which are like a combination of roasted seaweed with baked brown rice crisps.
It's not a seaweed chip like all thinking. Yeah. It's not like the nori sheets.
It's not the little slivers that come in the little box. No. And then we've got different.
The Beanfields Vegan Cracklins Chili Limon.
That's a very French pronunciation. I will take it.
For a Spanish-inspired snack food.
That's right.
And then we've got the Lesser Evil Power Curls Fiery Hot. Okay, so let's start with Annie Chun's.
Okay, Annie Chun's. I think what we should first do is smell, put your nose in that bag and see what the notes are.
It smells like seaweed. It doesn't smell as much like spice as I thought it might.
I agree with you.
So right, as Erica mentioned, this is roasted seaweed combined with baked brown rice chips. And it's almost like a layered thing where you've got like the rice chip and then a seaweed sheet on top of it.
It's like this little beautiful square tile.
It's a very
uniform.
It's a
1x1 inch little tile, which is seaweed on one side and like translucent brown rice cracker on the other.
Texturally, it looks very appealing. I also want to call Annie Chun's, if it's not ringing a bell for you, visually it would. It's like one of the main Asian food brands carried in grocery stores. But I've never eaten any of their snack foods before.
Me either. Should we try these?
Yeah.
Oh.
Surprisingly sweet.
I agree. Surprisingly sweet.
Even though it says right on the front, sweet and spicy, I'm still surprised by the sweet.
I would say more sweet than spicy. What do you think?
Definitely. I mean, it tastes like a dessert to me.
And it's got a little more spice.
I could use some more salt on it, though. I'm not going to lie.
Claire, I could use more salt on everything.
Oh. People who have like hearing who are sensitive to sounds are going to hate how closely I'm chewing to the mic.
You're leaning into the microphones to chew these. Yeah, no one probably needs that, huh?
You know, I like this. It's much milder than I would have thought.
I do find the texture to be really delightful. And I love a seaweed like undertone to any snack food.
I do too. I'm wondering what I would eat this with or what I would like.
Would you dip it in something?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around. Maybe like a miso yogurt dip or something.
There's that great miso yogurt. Yes, I do.
That our friend Dan made for us once.
We should link to it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll link to that.
That's really good. Really it would be good with this.
And maybe like some carrots or something with that.
Yeah.
I'm picturing.
I could also totally see this like sprinkled in like rice or something like that if you wanted to break it up. I'm not someone who's very good at doing stuff like that, but I could totally see it in a salad or like with rice noodles or something like that.
Or over like a roasted broccoli or something, like a soy roasted broccoli with this on top.
I don't know. Is Annie Chun suggesting that kind of usage? What do they say? No, they're really just saying
they're like,
it's
put
a snack
this in
food.
Your mouth and chew it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, these snack food companies love to suggest that you sprinkle things in a salad.
That's right. Let's move on to the next.
Okay. So Beanfields Vegan Cracklins Chile Limon. Mm-hmm. And Beanfields, I came to know through what I think was their original offering, which was like bean-based chips.
That's right. That's right. And these, they claim, are the best vegan cracklins. And that implies, of course, that there's much competition in the vegan cracklin space.
Well, when I was...
there is more and more.
There is, for sure. And I, when I was Googling to try to link to these, I found that there's something called Snacklins, which is like, they're really clearly trying to dominate the market.
I have seen those, but have not tried, I don't think. Okay, what do these smell like? Oh, like chili powder. Like
intensely
lot of chili
spicy.
Powder.
Yeah.
In your hand, they're very like russet colored.
And they're like curly. They're curly like a pig's tail.
Totally.
They're made with navy beans and chickpea powder and like an absolutely ungodly amount of spice on them.
I've picked up one and my fingers are coated.
It's not a criticism. I like a lot of spice.
It looks like a pasta shell or something or like cavatelli or something.
Mm-hmm. It looks like it's going to be hard.
Should we try it?
Yeah.
I want more lime.
I like the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I like the texture.
Me too.
There's too much spice on, like too much of the flavor for me.
I want more citrus and less chili powder. Right?
Yeah. These are the ones that Chris cracked open. And I understand why he didn't eat more. And it's not because they're bad, but the flavor is really intense.
It is intense.
You can only eat small doses, you know? You know what I like about this package? It has a picture of a really big vegan cracklin.
Like a fist size vegan cracklin.
And then it says enlarged to be bold.
And bold all caps, is bold. All caps. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, not bolded.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. Also, as if anybody thought this was going to be the size of the vegan cracklin. It also does say in all caps right on the front, full on flavor. And that is not a lie.
Can you think of alt uses for this product besides eating it by itself? I'm picturing like maybe crushed and used as a chicken breast or thigh breading.
Like vegan cracklin crusted tenders.
That's right.
I love
it. Not a mouthful at all.
No, I could see it. I could absolutely see it. Listen, I like the concept of a vegan cracklin.
And and texturally, these are very good.
Very good. I wouldn't say they are the exact same texture as a cracklin. Like,
no.
I think they're inspired by cracklins. They're not cracklin derived necessarily.
Well, I just also, I find it to be a challenge. I challenge the concept that anyone who is interested in a vegan snack product wants a cracklin.
I think you're absolutely right about that because a cracklin
I think it's
is,
not something people who are vegan are seeking.
I think few vegans are out there being like, but the thing that I really miss is a cracklin. Because a cracklin, even for like the most passionate meat eaters amongst us, is an intense meat product. All right.
Should we move on to our last?
Yeah. So this is the one that you seem most excited about.
I will confess that I have tried its companion flavor or its companion product, the Lesser Evil. What's the other one called?
Paleo Puffs.
Yeah, the Lesser Evil Paleo Puffs, which I like a lot. And I couldn't remember what the difference was. And then it's revealed that the Power Curls, which we're about to try, are made from egg proteins, which I do think is like a very compelling, because the Paleo Puffs are like cassava flour and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, things cavemen had so much access to.
Right,
we are made to believe. Unlike wheat, cavemen had a ton of access to cassava flour.
But power curls are the protein rich, also paleo, certified paleo, grain-free,
gluten-free,
humanely raised, gluten-free, non-GMO. And then they have a pepper there as though that's one of its certifications as well.
Non-GMO, et cetera, et cetera.
I still don't know what macros are, but this has great ones.
I felt the same. I don't know what macros are. I don't know how to count them.
No.
But it says right here on the package, good macros.
Yep.
Great
yep,
macros, yep. actually. Great macros.
Great macros. All right, let's smell these.
It's got kind of a cheesy.
Yeah. And like a little spice, but not like the other... Not that like strong chili smell.
And the shape looks really satisfying. It's like, it's not, it's an irregular little like U
like
shape.
Smiley.
Yeah, exactly. All right, try it. Wow, I love the texture.
Yeah, I really like the texture.
It is both crunchy and chewy at once. It is a really, the food scientists over there really nailed the texture. Because it's kind of soft. It's not crunchy. You know
it
how
like it melts in your mouth, kind
yes.
of.
Yes. It's, I've never tasted anything like that texturally. Because it's not like how, like, it's not the type of crunch that's like sharp. You're not going to scrape the roof of your mouth with this.
No. I have to say that the paleo puffs have a stronger like coating of flavor on them. Mm. And are like extremely spicy. And these are a little bit more mellow, probably just
but these
because...
have some serious spice.
No,
to them.
I know. But the other ones are like even more so.
I would eat, I'm gonna eat the whole bag. I'm super into these.
These power curl things in general, I've eaten a whole bag of before in another flavor. They're really delicious.
I would say that the I want to comment on the actual flavor because I've really given you a lot on the texture, but it's adjacent to a Flaming Hot. Flavor, I would say that it's like, it's, oh yeah, it's nowhere near as intense or as acidic, but why it's similar is because it's like, it's got an essence of cheese, but it's not cheesy, but it's spicy.
And it definitely sticks around.
Mm-hmm. I'm super into a power curl. You know, they're
Can
not
you
lying.
Think of all uses for these? I'm struggling to think of all uses for these.
You know, what's so funny that I don't think any of these people on their packaging have suggested that we crumble these up and put them in a salad.
No, it's weird.
Not a single, no.
I feel like the snap pea, the those freeze-dried snap peas or whatever, they have all kinds of ideas.
Cam loves those. Okay, what they do say about these, which is interesting, is that you can feel good about taking these for a dip or double dip. And I'm not sure, I would never think to dip this.
No, me either. But I guess you could do in like a blue cheese or something.
I mean, that'd be delicious and decadent.
Like a buffalo situation.
Would make me feel like a stoner a little bit because it's really
for
feels
sure.
like, I mean.
It doesn't feel like these need more flavor.
These are absolutely my favorite of the three.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. While you keep munching, can I intro our guest?
Please do.
We have Julia Tertian, who is the author of some of our very favorite cookbooks, including Small Victories, Now and Again, Feed the Resistance, and her newest one, Simply Julia, which is out next week. We are so, so excited to talk to her. She also hosts an IACP-nominated podcast called Keep Calm and Cook On, and she's just a joy.
She is. And you and I both read her cookbook over the weekend and like really read it. And I'm not someone who genuinely like sits down and reads a cookbook. I know you are. I did. And with like total joy and pleasure. She is so caring for her readers and for her audience. And she really is someone who teaches you how to cook, not just like gives you recipes. And I think any of her cookbooks, especially Simply Julia, would be amazing gifts for anybody in your life who doesn't feel confident cooking and needs to sort of get their training wheels.
All right, let's get Julia on.
Thank you so much to Best Fiends for sponsoring today's episode. I've been thinking a lot lately about the importance of just doing certain things that truly have no end goal. Like they're not about self-improvement. They're not about education. It's not about achieving something. Because you and I have talked about how we have such a hard time, even when it comes to like our our recreation time being like, oh, but yeah, what movie should I watch because I could use it in the newsletter?
Or
because
it's the one that everyone's talking about.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, do I need to have seen that to be part of the cultural conversation?
Exactly, Erica. And like, there's just always like taking these sort of like, how productive is it ideas into consideration. And I've been really liking the idea of like things like phone games as just like, there's truly no end to it. Like, it's just to let your brain go. And
not everything in your life should be homework.
Exactly. Exactly. I also find this is like a nice way to wake up your brain in the morning. That's not Instagram. That's not Twitter. That's just like, it's just a soft entry into the world. And can I tell you, Best Fiends is truly a soft entry into the world each morning. Like, it's just sweet little characters. The bad characters aren't even all that bad. Like, it just feels like a nice, gentle way.
The stakes are low. The stakes are low. That's what
right.
we need.
The stakes
so
are low.
If you don't know, Best Fiends is the can't put it down mobile game that is free to download with over 100 million downloads. 100 million.
That's so many.
This 5-star rated mobile game is a must play. Best Fiend is a cast of fiends who help solve each level and defeat the slugs, the slimy, but still, as we mentioned, cute baddies. Once you download Best Fiends, you can't put it down. With Best Fiends, the fun never ends. And no exaggeration, there are 5,000 puzzle levels and counting. But again, like, it's not necessarily about progress. It's just the escape.
It's just these lovable characters that you're hanging out with for a period of time.
Exactly. Don't blame us if you end up kind of obsessed. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Thank you so much to Kula for sponsoring today's episode. So the older I get, the more I like understand the jar of thick moisturizer.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like before it was like, oh, like a pump of like, you wanted something like lightweight and like a thin oil and like yes. whatever that you just like press into your face. And now I'm like, no, I want something that I like have two scoops of with mm-hmm. my fingers.
You want something heavyweight?
I want something heavyweight. And I am extremely, extremely happy that that is what Kula is offering me. Kula has a new great barrier cream fortifying moisturizer that is like, it's like satisfyingly thick.
It's
you know what I mean?
Thick. Yeah.
And it comes in a jar that just makes you feel like I am an adult woman who is taking care of herself.
I agree completely. Listen, Kula pioneered healthy sun protection, and they also know that most of us are looking for more than just sun protection from our products, which I appreciate because, you know, we don't need like a million bottles on our countertop. We just need the ones that really work and have all the stuff we need. So Kula just launched a new organic skincare collection that supports your skin's natural barrier to help fight modern day skin aggressors like blue light, toxins, dry air, and even your lifestyle. It's your first line of protection to keep moisture and nutrients in modern day environmental and digital stress out. So there's their great barrier cream fortifying moisturizer, which Erica just
this
talked
is the one.
About.
This
yeah,
is the one.
That's the one that makes her feel like an adult. It harnesses the healing power of the sea with organic ingredients like sea kelp and blue algae to boost hydration and help strengthen your skin's natural barrier. There's also the new Vital Rush Skin Renewal Serum that revitalizes stressed skin with an organic blend of plant power ingredients. And my like new HG that I'm obsessed with is the award-winning Sun Silk Drops from Kula. These are a fan favorite sheer drop. They are truly so sheer. They provide lightweight broad spectrum SPF 30 and Kula's full spectrum 360 degree technology to help mitigate the effects of blue light, IR, and pollution. You can use them alone or blended with your favorite moisturizer or foundation because guess what? They're like so thin and weightless. You can truly like put them on with anything else.
This we do still want as a thin and weightless situation.
Yes, that's right. I don't need my sunscreen to be like the bulk. Want to give your skin what it's really craving? Check out the new Kula Organic Skincare on Kula.com. They'll even give you 10% off your first order with the code ATHINGERTWO. That's Kula.com and use code ATHINGERTWO for 10% off. We are so grateful to you for using these codes. They help advertisers know that you care about what we're recommending, you know, and they keep them coming back. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Will Cole. As a leading functional medicine practitioner, I have had the unique position to see so many alchemize their pain and health problems to their purpose. Now I want the same for you. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers, where there is a fresh infusion of grace and lightness into wellness. This is the art of being well. Join me every Thursday for a new episode.
Julia, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to both of you. And it's so nice to see you, even though we are far away.
Yes. Even though we are far away, Julia, we honestly will have you anytime. One of the things we wanted to talk about in relation to this glorious, glorious cookbook is that it's really rooted in the ideas of healthy eating and also comfort food. And both of those two categories feel like things that people have a lot of thoughts and feelings and maybe, you know, pent up history with. Mm-hmm. How do you think about those two categories and how have those feelings changed over time?
Yeah, it's a great question because they are, both those words are so loaded and then you put them together and it's like, whoa, what is this? I mean, the way I came to that subtitle is thanks to my wife, Grace, who you both know. And Grace is just very smart and wonderful. And one of the many things I love about her, she just like gets straight to the point really quickly. And my whole career and really my whole life, because I've loved to cook for so long, I have always loved to eat and cook food from everywhere. And I have had a hard time answering the question, what kind of food do you make? Like when people are like, oh, you're like, you write cookbooks or you like to cook, like what kind of food do you do or something like that? And I like will spend an hour answering that question as I am right now. As you can see. And so when it came to the subtitle for this book, I was sort of talking about that with Grace and she was like, you make healthy comfort food. Like that's what you do. That's like your specialty. And it just felt so like crystal clear. So that's sort of how that came to be. But then also like, okay, so what is that?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What does that mean? And so for me, it means just even in the way I just said that, it means something really personal. Like, and I will tell you what it means for me. I won't keep avoiding the question. but my feeling in this book is just to, my goal, I guess, is to encourage everyone to define that for themselves, to define what does healthy mean for you. What does comfort mean for you? What do those things mean together? And to sort of embrace the fact that like the definitions are very different for all of us and those definitions can evolve. So for me, healthy means my entire relationship to food. It's not just like, am I eating something green and something, I don't know, a whole grain or these kinds of things that I think get talked about a lot. It's really about like, how am I feeling when I'm eating? And for me, in terms of the evolution of that, which I think you asked, that has changed a lot because I used to feel, as much as I love to cook and have for so long, I used to feel like incredibly scared of a lot of what I ate. And I had a lot of guilt wrapped up into it and just like a whole slew of stress and anxiety and kind of like body image stuff. And I wouldn't say that I live without any of those things anymore, like, you know, work in progress. But I am so happy to be in a place where I feel just a great sense of freedom when I'm cooking and eating and a great sense of calm. And for me, that feels really healthy to not feel scared of what I eat, to find pleasure in it. You know, we get to, if we're lucky, we get to eat multiple times a day, whatever we want. And I think of meals as like each is an opportunity to get pleasure. Like how amazing is that? So those are the things I think of when I think of healthy. It's not about vegetables or, you know, what's missing from my plate. You know, it's not about restriction of any kind. And I think, you know, if this episode had to be 10 seconds and nothing else, like the message I want to get across most importantly is like healthy does not equal skinny and vice versa. Like those things are not synonyms. And in terms of comfort, I would say kind of, you know, really the same thing, like food that feels really healthy to me also feels really comforting and really comfortable too, you know, and that is true from the moment I'm buying groceries. Like I don't want to feel stressed out about it, you know, to cooking, you know, I want to feel as calm as possible in my kitchen. And of course, when it comes to eating, you know, I just want to feel really comfortable and comforted and getting to offer those things to myself, you know, someone who cooks all the time, like I eat the meals that I cook. That feels like a pretty amazing thing to be able to do for myself. So did that answer your question?
Yeah,
kind of?
Okay. Definitely. I also I really like the word comfortable, which I don't really think about in association with food a lot. And it feels very useful.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah.
All of this.
I like that. I'm now like, should I read it? I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because comforting is one thing, but comfortable is something else.
Yeah.
And yeah. Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like you're like actively participating in it as opposed to it doing it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I just agree. I'm just not.
This all feels like it relates to this essay in the book called On the Worthiness of Our Bodies, mm-hmm. which I think spoke a lot to both of us. And you are so honest in it. And I think probably like most people who read it relate to it. Can you talk about how your experience with your body has evolved, especially as it relates to your job, which is food writing? And you talk about this thing that like hit closer to home than I wanted it to, which is like you had this realization that you had two states, basically either being happy or fat, or feeling happy or fat, I guess I should say, which is like such a like sad thing to realize, right? But and it hit me like, oh my God, you really felt that way? And then I was like, okay, but like if I'm really honest with myself, could I also say that maybe that's been true of me for a lot of for much of my life? And
we've talked about this, Claire, too. I remember there was like some conversation we had walking down a street in Dumbo where we talked about God, the time when I felt like the best about my body, I felt like the shittiest about everything else. And it was like clearly from a place of control or just like being like dealing with stress or anxiety in really specific ways.
Again, a lot of nodding. I really appreciate you bringing this essay up, and I'm both so happy and also so sad to know that it resonated, because I think that essay is a combination of a lot of things, and not just, you know, happy or fat or happy or sad. It's a mixture of things. So I guess just for the benefit of anyone who hasn't, you know, read it, in the cookbook, there's a handful of essays that kind of tackle some topics that I think should be, you know, there's space for them in a book that's about healthy comfort food, this thing we're talking about. So this one is the one that feels totally like the most vulnerable, but also like the most important. And I'm so glad it's in there. And it's just, yeah, this really like honest reflection about my kind of evolving relationship to my body and body image and all of that. So, your question was like, how has that changed?
And okay. how has your you know, occupation as a food writer influenced your evolution with,
It's interesting what you said, Erica, about the conversation the two of you had about like feeling best about your body when other things were not feeling great. That definitely rings true for me. And heard something in that that you said about like, you know, sort of everything feeling like stressful or out of control. So food is this place where we can assert so much control. We can restrict things. We can deny ourselves things. We can do all these things that are exercises of control that I think ultimately, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but like ultimately I think actually make us feel pretty miserable. And yeah, the opposite of like free and calm and happy and all those things I was talking about before. So, you know, I have had, alongside my lifelong love of food and cooking, also a lifetime of feeling really fraught about all those things. And that is informed by a lot of things, not just one, but one is just, you know, the pervasive diet culture that we are all immersed in. And that was very much the, I don't know, background music of my childhood. But yeah, like both my parents were always like on different diets. My mom, like very much so. She has a complicated relationship with her body. I am sharing stuff she has told me is like okay to share. And like she and I, our conversation around it has evolved over the years. But basically, yeah, and I like experienced a lot of bullying when I was younger about my body and the size of it. And I just hated my body. And I didn't know there were other options. And yeah, I had this sort of light bulb moment one day a couple of years ago, because I started the process of it, to me, everything I'm talking about right now, when I like, when I close my eyes, the image I see is like a really complicated knot. And I started the process of trying to just untie that and understand it. Like I knew I felt icky and I felt sad often, but I didn't really understand why. And these things I'm able to talk calmly about now, it took me years to really like understand. And part of that was one day this realization where I was like, oh my gosh, like I have only ever felt two things. Like I have felt happy or fat. And first of all, fat is not a feeling. There's that. Second, I had, you know, limited all of my feelings to just two. And there's a lot of feelings out there. And that meant I was denying so many of them.
Do you like, think that, sorry to interrupt you, do you think that that is because you felt, when you felt fat, and like scare quotes on felt, because it's not a feeling, you didn't allow yourself to feel happy at the same time.
Yeah, totally. That feels really accurate. And I had like, also, it felt like fat was anything other than happy. So exactly what you just said, Claire, like those two things couldn't exist at the same time. Like that never occurred to me because I had never seen it. You know, I grew up around a lot of people who thought like the worst thing you could be was fat. And I never knew there was an option where you could be fat and happy or, you know, not be trying to change your body. So as I began to untangle all of that, which I, you know, talk about a lot in the essay, to sort of answer your other question in terms of like my career as like a cookbook author, as like a food writer, you know, whatever I am, I don't know. it's brought upon a lot of reflection for me on this work because I didn't know this when I started writing recipes, but I've come to understand that writing recipes is a place where I have tried to exert so much control over food. You know, my career is measured in teaspoons. You know,
I feel like we just witnessed a major therapy breakthrough. I'm like, wow, you just dropped some really impressive analysis. Thank you so much to Upstart for sponsoring today's episode. Whenever we get approached by any sort of financial product to partner on this show as a sponsor, I think we both get a little clenchy because we're so...
We're not financial advisors.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels like we're really hesitant to endorse a financial product unless we know for sure that it's a good one. And there's just such a high likelihood of something being like predatory or scammy. And we don't want to get behind something like that. And this one was interesting because we went to a lot of media outlets and just sort of like resources that we trust to read about it. And we were slacking back and forth. And I was like, we were both like, I think this actually looks really legit and actually like really useful.
Something we would want people to know about and be able to do the digging on their own.
Exactly, exactly. So Upstart accepts and approves borrowers who are new to credit or who don't have great credit because they look at factors beyond just credit history when making decisions about your loan. And that was really interesting to us because you obviously have to be able to get credit in order to build credit. And that's just not a fair system for everyone. So if you have a credit card or multiple credit cards that you've been avoiding dealing with, which like we have all been there where you just like don't even want to know what the balance is. It feels easier just ignoring it.
Where you only like look with one eye.
Just like sort of like peeking through your fingers. Upstart can help you confront it and pay it off in a way that feels manageable.
Listen, last year was really hard on everyone and for a lot of people that involve financial difficulties, and as tempting as it is to hide from it or, you know, like only open the bill halfway, it's much more empowering to face it and figure out how you're going to solve it. Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. So with a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans from $1 to $50,000. You can get approved the same day and can receive funds as fast as one business day. If debt is taking over your life, it's time to get a fresh start with Upstart. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/a thing or two. That's upstart.com/a thing or two. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know that we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/a thing or two.
I've always felt this tension of being someone who loves the process of writing recipes. Like I love giving people really clear instructions, making you feel like for me, cooking at home is like the least stressful thing in my life. It's what I do to feel calm and connected to myself. And I know for so many people, it stresses them out so much. And so my whole career, I have just wanted to alleviate some of that stress. So I try to do that in a number of ways, including suggesting lots of like variations on things. Like if you don't have this ingredient, use this, it's not a big deal, all that kind of stuff. But I also feel this tension because as much as I love that process and love writing recipes and love figuring out the exact amount of something so you don't have to, I never, unless I'm working on a cookbook, I never ever follow recipes. Like I cook completely intuitively. I just use up whatever we have, that kind of thing. So I have not always known how to reconcile those two parts of myself. And I realized the like attempt to quantify things. Like that's a big thing for me when it comes to like food and weight and body image stuff. Like it's just sort of, you know, comparison syndrome stuff. Like it could be my weight, you know, like that number, like I have an emotional reaction to that. I'll add, I like threw out my scale a few years ago. I have no idea what I weigh. So, like, you know, I have no idea, but that's like one way we count things and measure ourselves against ourselves and each other. Just like I think a lot of people do with like, how many followers do you have on social media? Or like how many reviews of your product are on whatever site?
Right,
like,
right.
You know, we have all these ways to like count.
Or how many steps quantify. You've taken each day.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
All of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, my therapist recently was like, you need to delete that thing on your phone. She actually gave me really good advice, which I'll share, which is like, when you want to go look at the step counter or whatever, like whatever the health app or whatever.
Yeah.
Like whenever you're looking for that, when you're refreshing your social media thing, whatever it is, just like the step she gave me was like, because the idea of deleting some of these things feels overwhelming to me. I know I'm on a tangent.
And in some cases, impractical.
Yeah, totally. So she was like, when you go to check these numbers, like just take a second and be curious and ask yourself, like, what are you looking for? And like asking myself that question has been really, really helpful.
So that feels like profound advice.
Yeah.
I'm just like giving you the best hits of my
I know. Love your therapist.
This is like thousands of free dollars we're getting right here.
Years of session boiled down to 10 minutes. Oh my gosh. Just getting a real laugh out of that. So yeah, I've always felt this tension of like writing recipes, but also like pushing away from them, like not wanting to follow them. And just, yeah, getting really curious about that distinction and understanding that I think part of that is, I think myself now doesn't want to be a person who measures everything and wants to go towards also the part of me that's always been there, the part of me that just wants to cook and just live intuitively and be a person who's not count. You know, I was on and off Weight Watchers for like over a decade. You know, like it's very hard for me to not calculate point amounts of things. Like it's so ingrained in me. And it's like, I got like my lowest weight, which corresponded with my sort of lowest point. Was a moment when I was like, I cannot count everything I eat for the rest of my life. Like I'm miserable. Like this just doesn't feel good.
Take this one back to your therapist. I don't know what she'd have to say about it, but I think the thing that occurred to me as you were describing this like tension between writing recipes, but never following them is that something that I feel really passionately about in relation to your work is that I think that you set people up to cook intuitively. Like you really teach people how to be cooks through your recipes, which I just think such a generous, caring thing that you do. And so to me, it doesn't feel like a tension that you don't follow recipes yourself.
Well, anyway, when you were saying you live your life in teaspoons, I was like, no, because you give it like you create all this flexibility in every like header for a recipe. It's like, or do this or do that, or like maybe mix eggs in, or I don't know. Like, and you're like, oh, this is how you get ideas. And this is how you actually learn to cook.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys. That, like all means a lot.
When you're thinking about developing recipes that fit into especially the parameters of this cookbook, the like healthy comfort food, how are you thinking about like how to shape a recipe or to give it qualities that you feel healthy and comforting?
Yeah. That's a really great question that again brings me back to my wife, Grace, because when I was at the moment of, I think I had sold the book and pretty much figured out my table of contents, and I was getting into the part of the process where I was writing a ton and starting the recipe testing process. It coincided with Grace closing Design Sponge, which was her business of 15 years. And so we both always worked from home. We're used to being with each other all day, every day. Like the pandemic is, we're very well suited for it, which we had no idea would be the case. But anyway, Grace tested every recipe in this book. And so she like took that time, you know, the immediate like couple months after closing her site to really like support me in this book. And it was like this pretty amazing process, including like so much of everything we're talking about like body image and stuff. Like, again, for me, it goes back to her. Like, I think she saw how miserable I was and also was living, you know, in a marriage with someone who hated their body. And that's not fun to be around. And, you know, wasn't, you know, being two women in a relationship, we both come with our own sort of body image baggage and stuff, and mine wasn't helping hers, and you know, all that. And she was very encouraging of like, there's other options, like you don't have to live this way. So much of all these things we're talking about, I've very much like learned from her and been supported in this by her. And so when she was testing the recipes, I promise I'm getting full circle on this, she would often kind of be the sort of like built-in pause button to reflect on this, because I would say something like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. There's a recipe in the side dish chapter for these really delicious grits. It's like all the flavors of ranch dressing. It's like mustard and some dried dill and all these things. And they're like these cheesy ranch grits. They're really good. And, you know, I was like putting in like a tiny bit of like cheese, or like maybe they can just be ranch grits, not cheesy ones. And then she was like, what's wrong with cheese? Like, why aren't you putting the cheese in? And I was like, oh, healthy. And she was like, well, what does that mean? Like, would these be better with that? Would they taste better? Would you have a more pleasurable experience eating it? Like, because that's healthy too. And like being scared of this type of thing. So that was a big part of the process, kind of going back and forth with her on ingredients. And I mean, a lot of the recipes in the book, not every single one, but the majority of them are informed by two things. One is, again, grace, because all of this cooking is, you know, from my kitchen to yours. And our kitchen is the one that produces all of our meals. And we are, you know, we eat all of our meals at home, which was true like pre-pandemic, because we live in a pretty rural area. And yeah, a few years ago, Grace was diagnosed as an adult with type 1 diabetes, which she can and does eat anything she wants. But in terms of like managing insulin and stuff, which is a complicated equation that she deals with like every minute of every day, you know, eating a slightly like lower carb diet makes those swings just a little easier to manage. So that is, I mean, I just made like spaghetti for lunch. It's not like we don't eat like carbohydrates in our house, but her kind of health needs and stuff inform a lot of what we both cook and eat. And then also we do a lot of volunteering in our community, and we cook at an organization that's kind of like a local Meals on Wheels program. And all the clients are homebound for a variety of reasons. So it's a lot to consider in the preparing of the meals. But for the most part, we're trying to make healthy comfort food. We're trying to make food that people want to eat, because a lot of them are on like medications. They need to be eating. It has to be appealing. You know,
they might have lost their appetite.
Exactly. Yeah. But also we want to make sure to pack those meals with like as many like, you know, vitamins and like wonderful things to make them feel better. So it's, you know, it's like the obvious stuff. It's like a lot of vegetables and a lot of like lean protein and all that kind of stuff. But it's like with like no fear of flavor or like personality or anything like that. So that's where so many of the recipes in the book come from. So in terms of sort of like the logistics of what influence, like what I deem to be healthy or not, it sort of comes from just a lot of consideration of who I'm cooking for.
One of the things that was very easy to glean when reading the book is just how much credit you give in general to the sort, both, you know, the sources of the recipes from the other cookbook authors you may have drawn from, or restaurants that you'd eaten at, or even that your parents had eaten at.
Mm-hmm. And also Dr. Prager's. Oh, and Dr. Dinosaur shaped nuggets that Cam loves, and apparently Grace also loves.
Yeah, it all goes back to Grace.
I just think there are a few cookbooks that shout out Dr. Prager's.
I mean,
less than there should be.
Yeah,
for sure.
How do you think about attribution in food, which is something you've been, I think, very good at for a long time, but a lot of people are sort of just catching up on?
Yeah, I'm glad it seems that way to you. I don't know that I've been good at it for a long time. It's something I'm always trying to be better at. I think it's incredibly important for obvious reasons. I think that, you know, if something inspired something, like, what a great story to tell, as opposed to like, how do I make this mine? How do I become the whatever? I mean, a really interesting fact that I feel like a lot of people don't know is that you cannot copyright a recipe, which sometimes I feel like when I share that with people, they're like really surprised. But I don't think it's surprising at all, because I think if you could, like, three cookbooks would exist, right? Like, I didn't invent roasted chicken. I didn't invent tomato sauce, or I don't know, chocolate cake, or any of these things that I, you know, write recipes for. I mean, I pay a lot of attention to the ones I put in my book and how I'm, you know, writing the steps and all that stuff. Like, I mean, I'd be happy to get into like all those details more, but what you can copyright, which when I say that is, it means like essentially like what you can claim ownership of and what feels original is the story. And, you know, why is this roast chicken the one that I'm sharing? Why is this tomato sauce the one that I'm like telling you to spend your money on ingredients and time to make, you know? And in sharing those sort of stories and the context around recipes, that is what makes me love the work I do and love cookbooks. And it's why I've loved cookbooks my whole life. All I ever want to know is what everyone had for lunch. And I will like be asking both of you that, like, when we stop recording. My parents worked full time when I was growing up. And when they came home, no matter how late it was at night, like I would stay up so I could ask them what they had for lunch at work. Like, because it made me feel like, oh, like you're going to this thing called the office. Like, where is, you know, like when
it
I was
gave you some context.
Yeah. I was like, okay, but what happens there? And like, what do you actually do? Right. And when I found out whatever they had for lunch, I was like, okay, like I can imagine it. I can visualize it. And that continues to be true to this day about people across the world. Like, that is how I feel like I understand the world. So again, super long answer to your question, but in terms of giving credit, like where credit is absolutely due, it's not just something I do because I absolutely agree. Like, I think it's like the right thing to do. It's also because like, what a joy it is to share all of these moments of like connection. And the most gratifying part of my work and the thing that I never anticipated when I started doing my own cookbooks, because I've done a lot of collaborative ones, but doing my own has allowed me to connect with so many queer women who reach out to me and tell me about, you know, what it means to see me, you know, as a woman use the word wife over and over in my cookbooks, what it's meant to their families and stuff. And to have that feels major.
That's really special.
It really is.
Whose work do you follow and who do you wish were getting a bigger sort of piece of this food media pie?
Fantastic question and so hard to answer because like the list is so long. Yeah. So I will just first say a couple years ago, I founded a database called Equity at the Table, which kind of speaks to a lot of the things we're talking about. It's a database for women and non-binary and gender non-conforming people in food who identify as either not white or as queer and or both, obviously. And there are like about 1,000 members of the site. So I would say first and foremost, just scroll there, scroll away
them.
But specifically like, yeah, if I get the chance to shout some people out, I think Mavis J. Sanders and Cicely Sierra Johnson, who run a company called Food Plus People, they're amazing. Their products are great. They make things like this pancake mix. You just add water. They're the most delicious pancakes. They make awesome hot sauces and like spice rubs and stuff like that. But also the way they approach all of this and just how they speak about what they make. And they're just awesome. And I think this pretty shining example of like a Black queer couple kind of bringing a lot of joy and love to their work and showing us what that looks like. So I think they're amazing. Yeah, I mentioned Patty Heenich before. I love her show. So I follow that. Yawande, who writes for The Times and who's working on her Nigerian cookbook. I think she's one of the absolutely most just talented and seasoned recipe testers and developers. Like, I trust her work so much. Like, if it's a Yawande recipe, I'm like, oh, this is totally going to work. And I think she has a lot of just smart insights and stories to tell. So that's someone who comes to mind. I'll say something that I would like to see more, but I don't see a lot, is a conversation about the intersection of food and disability. And I think that's just so important, whether it's like, you know, kitchen design or like the accessibility of certain ingredients. Like, a lot of people who are like, who care a lot about sort of like quote unquote farm to table and maybe aren't thinking totally about what that actually means. I don't know. And then like, will shake their head at something like pre-cut vegetables at the grocery store or something. And I'm like, no, those actually like help a lot of people.
Yeah, really amazing.
Stuff like that. And so I think that's a conversation I wish I saw more in food media.
Julia, thank you so much for coming on. This was so wonderful, as always.
I really feel like this was a great therapy session.
That's the show. This has been a production of Dear Media. You can follow us on Instagram at @athingortwoHQ. You can listen to us wherever podcasts are found, like Stitcher, iTunes, and Spotify. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwoHQ.com. Find show notes and much more on athingortwoHQ.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Backstory, and wow, is this a full circle moment for us. Backstory was founded by the one and only Kalia Hargrove, who was an of-a-kind intern back in the day and just one of our very favorite people, and honestly, like one of the most impressive people that we've worked with. She's just so wonderful.
She was one of those, like, she was probably like 19 or 20 at the time, and you were like, oh, you're so put together and so polished and like... and so thoughtful, and how yes. exactly did this like, happen?
And like makes you feel embarrassed about who you were and how you behaved at that age, because
that's kind of what I'm trying to say. Yeah, exactly. How were you like this? And I was nowhere near this.
It's been so exciting to watch her launch her own company now and just be like, wow, like you go, you do it. It's been really amazing. And her client list is so impressive. We're just so excited to tell you about Backstory.
So yes, to dive into Backstory, it is a full service marketing agency working to help share your brand story with the world through a lens of diversity and inclusion. Their main service areas are brand positioning, social media strategy, influencer marketing, content development, copywriting and editing, crisis management, and DEI policy development. Backstory is a Black woman-owned business, and all of the projects are completed through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. With every project, Backstory does what they can to identify opportunities to amplify the voices of people from minoritized communities. Kalia, Backstory's founder, worked in marketing for almost 10 years at companies like Ralph Lauren, Calvin Klein, and Teen Vogue, where she always pushed for diversity and emphasized its importance. We cannot say enough about how wonderful and smart and just like winning and charming and perfect mm-hmm. she is.
Truly.
We cannot say enough how wonderful and smart and just like winning and charming and excellent Kalia is. Check out Backstory today at tellyourbackstory.com. That's tellyourbackstory.com, and follow the brand on @Backstory Consulting on Instagram.